And so, once again, back in the studio with Bill Rush, whom we expect to hear, and Patrice Mansell, whom we're pleased and unexpectedly pleased to be able to have with us. Bill and Patrice.
I'm thrilled.
I am, too. We've been burning up the telephone wires for the last year or so, and
yes.
It's wonderful to be here right next to you and being able to talk to you like this. Well, I do have a question now that I'm very curious about. When you arrived at the Met, Lily Pons, the renowned petite French diva, was the reigning coloratura soprano, not only of the Metropolitan, but I think probably of the entire world that time. And you sang so many of her roles, Lucia, Gilda in Rigoletto, Rosina in The Barber of Seville, Lacme, and then, of course, early in her career, she'd been there for about 12 years or so, I think. She sang Philine in Mignon, which was your
debut
role.
Yes,
exactly.
Oh, what fun.
And The Queen in the Coupe d'Or, which we just heard. So I guess my question is, was there ever any feeling from little Lily of Pat stepping on her train?
Never. She was always delicious. Actually, when I made my debut in Mignon, she sent me the most beautiful rhinestone crown and wand that was absolutely glorious for me to use for my debut in Mignon, which had been hers.
Ah.
And also a beautiful bouquet with all good wishes. And this was not a jealous soprano. She was just darling. We became friends, and when she married Andre Castellanets, we used to get together, she and my husband and Andre, and enjoy each other's company very much. And in when she moved out to where was she? Close to Palm Beach, Palm Springs.
Palm Springs,
yes.
Yeah.
We'd see her out there, and it was lovely. I just wish she'd had children, because I think they would have been delightful to know, and delightful people, because she had so much to pass on. But she was such a wonderful artist on stage. She had real, real presence.
Oh,
you knew
indeed.
When Lily walked on stage that a star came out. And that it wasn't an attitude. It was just her being herself.
Mm-hmm.
She was a prima donna. She was beautiful. She was charming and funny and talented. And so when she walked out on stage, you knew all of that immediately. She didn't have to open her mouth. You just knew that there was a presence there. And I was delighted to know her and that she accepted me. But everybody did. It was a totally different era. It was a repertory company because the war was going on. They could not import singers. Pinza was already here. And they did dastardly things to Ezio Pinza,
yes,
which was just shocking.
About that. Mm-hmm.
And but so we were really a repertory company of people who worked together on a very regular basis, and that's what made it so delicious. We had great rapport with each other. I loved dying with Leonard Warren. I loved kissing. Ferruccio Tagliavini. and dear me, who am I thinking of? My father was a dentist in Spokane, you know.
Right.
And he, when I got into the Met, he made me two slip-on things for these two side teeth because they were slightly shorter than my other teeth.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't have time to do anything permanent. We just had to have something like that. And so I was singing with... this is driving me crazy. A wonderful, wonderful European singer who was very, very famous. Will come to me in a blinding flash after we finish, of course. Anyway, we're doing our first Romeo and Juliet together. And so we came to our big kissing moment, and we kissed rather passionately. He was rather passionate. And
Romeo should be.
Definitely. But one of my caps came off and passed into his mouth. And I said very quietly to him, still kissing, pass it back, pass it back, which he did. And I took it very, very casually and slipped it down the front of my dress. And we went on singing the opera. But we never had the same quite passionate kiss on stage again when we did Romeo and Juliet.
Well, I was afraid for a moment you were going to say he suddenly took a deep breath and it disappeared.
Thank God that didn't happen.
Well, it's a wonderful story, dear. And it's good to hear that Lily was not only a good friend, but a good colleague
Yes. Oh, things, crazy things do happen. Actually, my first concert in Salt Lake City, after I had done my concert here in Spokane, my first concert, I went to Salt Lake City and sang an outdoor concert for the first time. And it was in a huge stadium, and I got to the last aria, which I was doing, was the mad scene from Lucia. And when I got to the high E at the end of the, I probably took it up a note and did an F. When I got to that note, a fly flew in my mouth.
Oh, no.
And I could feel this thing in there and actually hear it. And I held that note longer than I'd ever held it in my life. And my mother came backstage and she said, darling, I have never heard you hang on to that last note so long. And I said, I had a fly in my mouth and I had to wait until it flew out until I could close my mouth and stop the high note. So you never know what's going to happen.
The fly was probably dizzy with vibrations.
I'm sure, definitely.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Well, let's leave the world of opera and move on, and as you did well point out, a simultaneous career with light opera and operetta. But I've chosen something, and I'll tell you a little story of why I did this. About a year ago, I was very pleased to accept an invitation to do a program about you and illustrated with your recordings from the Opera Buffs of Spokane. And as the evening progressed, it was as though you were there singing right in the room. And we had comments and applause. And the number of all of the selections that I played that evening that drew the biggest applause and the most oohs and ahs you're about to hear, our radio audience is about to hear. And it is the Villa from The Merry Widow by Franz Lehár. Oh. And you just knocked them out. You weren't there, but you knocked them out.
Hot dog.
And this is from an RCA recording of a Lincoln Center revival of The Merry Widow from about 1964. So here is Patrice Munsell singing Villa.
Bewildered man, I see
1964, that was Patrice Mansell singing Vilja from The Merry Widow from the Lincoln Center Revival. Well, once again, back to Bill and Patrice.
But I'm so glad that you said that, Vern, because I should have gone up to that high piano note, and then which I had always done before. I can't imagine why I didn't do it on that recording, because it was just, it took it beyond just singing, and I loved hitting that pianissimo high note.
What did any of it have to do with a recording versus a performance?
I'm sure I've got one, yes, or one that was taken off of a performance, because I loved doing that show. It was a joy.
You did that with, I think, Bob Wright.
We
and
did.
You had done more work with him, because he was quite a well-known matinee idol in musical theater.
A great leading man.
Yeah.
It was the joy of my life to sing with Bob. We did South Pacific together. We did Kiss Me, Kate together. We did The Merry Widow, of course. But he was a great leading man. He was a handsome singer, marvelous singer, and just great on stage. But the marvelous thing is that he had a house up in the Adirondacks, and we had never been there before, and he invited my husband and I up to see the Adirondacks and see his house. And we came up, and it's a long story that I won't go into, fell in love with the Adirondacks, bought the house next door, and he would come up only for the summers. And his house was not winterized, but he would be there all summer, and we would come up mostly for the summer with all of our children and our grandchildren and love it a lot. He decided not to come back anymore 3 years ago. He said it was just too much work to open up the house. So he said, I'm offering the house to you first, because we were right next door. It was a very private little area on the beach, and so we bought it, and now our son lives next door to us in Scroon Lake, thanks to Bob Wright. And I thank him for all the joyous performances that we had together, all the fun. He was just fabulous to work with, and I'm very grateful that he was put into my life.
Oh, that's a wonderful story.
He's living in California and adoring it.
Let me ask you about another baritone, because it fits in with our musical theater section now, that you sang with undoubtedly at the Met. But I always thought, because he didn't do an awful lot of stage performances in musical theater, but he made many, many, many recordings, including two of my favorite, With You, in which the two of you sang opposite one another. I'm thinking of Carousel and Showboat, and of course, I'm thinking of Robert Merrill.
Oh, yes,
and
darling.
Always thought Robert Merrill, although he was always given credit as an opera singer, but if you listen to his musical theater recordings, he's right up there with Alfred Drake and who's the other one? John Raitt, who I love so much. And I mean, would you agree that he was wonderful in that area of musical?
Oh, everything. Comedy? He started out at Radio City. He was in the Radio City. He'd come out and sing, you know, before pictures and things. And so he had all of that stage presence and was wonderful for musical comedy and all of that. And I loved singing with him at the Met and doing duets on shows, on television shows and radio shows. And I loved doing things like Rigoletto with him. And he was a wonderful actor and a very funny, delicious man, totally down to earth, you know, just a lot of fun.
Yeah, he wrote a very funny book, as a matter of fact. So he did have a sense of humor, and I always loved his voice. Another American singer that you frequently were paired with was Jan Peerce.
Oh, yes.
In Rigoletto, Lucia, and probably others as well.
Yes.
You did a lot of work with Jan Peerce.
Jan was wonderful, and he was Richard Tucker's brother-in-law.
That's right.
They were...
But no love lost there between
none.
The two of them. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But I love Jan. He, again, was a very down-to-earth, very talented, easy person to work with a great sense of humor. and very warm person. I loved kissing Jan. I loved playing Rigoletto with him and Lucia and all of those roles. He was just great on stage.
And I believe, I'm correct, that he was myopic to the point of really not being able to see very well on stage. And I remember Licia Albanese telling a story in Faust that they were in a very dark set and he couldn't get off the stage. And she grabbed him by the wrist and said, "This way, Pierce, this way." And dragged him off stage. Did you ever have to do that?
I never had to drag him off stage, but he had a hard time seeing anything. He was very, very, very nearsighted, as was I. Oh, dear. Those were the days of the beginnings of contact lenses. And I can't remember what the opera was. I think it was Rigoletto. And I put in my new contact lenses. I never even had time to go to the doctor. I just said, "I need lenses right now." And so he brought them to the opera house, and they were as big as your eyeball was in those days. And you needed a suction cup to pull them out of your eye. And I got out there with these lenses in for the first time, and he didn't realize, the doctor, that there were bubbles that he'd gotten bubbles in it. You had to be very careful that you didn't get bubbles in the lenses. And I got out on the stage, and I couldn't see a damn thing. And the lights were reflected in the bubbles.
Of course.
So I was blind as a bat. And so I staggered off stage the moment I had a tiny break and said, suction cup. And of course she was Italian, and I had to say, suction cup, and run back on the stage and try and catch up with what I was doing. And so she finally came back. So the next break I had, I rushed off just to the corner of the stage and took them both out and went back to my old blind self. Well, not hardly, but very, very nearsighted. And waited quite a while before I got lenses again, until they got the little ones, but never again those great big things.
Well, that sounds like you and Mr. Pierce would be the blind leading the blind.
It was.
Well, I do want to go now into, I guess you'd call it, the last phase of your career.
Ew, that sounds ghastly.
Well, comparatively speaking, anyway. Although, God knows, it's just so delightful to be here sitting next to you, Pat, and you're so full of energy and life, and all of the memories come flooding back, and that's what I had hoped would happen. And if I can spur that along, then that's fine. So forgive me if I make a faux pas.
No, that's all right.
But I do want to go into what I guess we'd call crossover at this point. Actually, it's not crossover. It's wonderful popular music of the era. And I'm thinking of an album that you made, again, for RCA Victor in the 40s. And this was called the Rodgers and Hart Songbook.
Oh.
And you had a partner, a singing partner, in that album, Vaughn Monroe,
yes,
who I'm sure many people remember.
Delightful man.
And you each had two solos and two duets.
Uh-huh.
And I've chosen, again, this is a number that went over very well at the Opera Buffs a year ago when I played it. This is My Funny Valentine, one of my all-time favorite songs.
Me too.
And it's from a rather obscure musical called Babes in Arms, which hasn't been revived, but it's just chock full of wonderful songs by that team. And before we get into any more conversation about that, and I do want to ask you something, let's listen to Patrice Munsell singing My Funny Valentine by Rodgers and Hart.
Thank you. Is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you
the one we've been waiting for, isn't it, Bill?
Absolutely. Yeah, that in my book goes right to the top echelon of pop music, if you want to call it pop music. But I know Pat will agree with me. The thing that strikes me about that is that it is so direct, it is so simply done, and it's all about words, words, words.
Yes.
It's text that delivers the message. That's what Sinatra did, that's what Ella Fitzgerald did, and you're right up there, kid, with them.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It's what I talk about if I do talk to young singers, saying if your diction isn't any good, you can't project your message. Your diction has got to be really good and really out there. Oh, I'm big on that. Anyway, it's just a joy that you played that song, because it's one of my very, very favorites.
Oh, good.
I
mine
love it
too.
Passionately.
Well, we're both in agreement about that. And the whole time spent here in the studio with you has been so rewarding and so informative. And I wish we'd had time for more recordings. But when you're back in the Adirondacks, we're going to do another program of just recordings. And I'll send that to you so you'll know what we did. But again, a great, great pleasure. And I'm sure Vern wants to join me in thanking you for giving us the time to spend with us here.
So much fun for me.
What a great weekend we're having here in Spokane. And we should say that we were recording this program in the early October weekend, in which you've come back, Pat, to help bring back the Metropolitan Opera auditions, not only to Spokane, but to that place where you started, the Fox Theater.
Yes. The most important. I was so thrilled when I knew that they were bringing the auditions back to Spokane. It never was here when I grew up, and apparently has been lost to Spokane for quite a while. And I think the most important thing that the people in this area can do is see to it that it's brought back every year to support the young singers in Washington. It is really, really, really a marvelous opportunity to be heard, to be seen and have the opportunity to go possibly to the Met, and the people in Spokane can help that happen.
Great. Well, thanks so much for your visit, and have a great trip back.
Love you. Love seeing you both, and thank you so much. It's been great fun, Bill. Great
My
fun,
pleasure.
Thank you.